healthcare system is one that we trust, or at least one that we want to trust. After all, we do trust hospitals with our lives in a very literal sense. However, anyone is vulnerable to a cyber attack that is able to halt all computer operations. Computer operations including electronic charting and looking up of hospital records. The ability to network medical devices together is both a blessing and a curse. The ease at which it makes automatically storing records and important charting data from devices is undeniable. But these records also now need to be secured. This is mainly covered by the HITECH Act, which encourages electronic storage for medical records as well as good security practices for the storage of said records. But not all hospitals practice good security despite HITECH, and most breaches in security are due to simple mistakes in security practices. This is true for everything, and it's especially true for hospitals. Today, we will be going over the curse of WannaCry, the computer virus that crippled the NHS because hospitals just didn't want to update Windows. Eternal Blue was an exploit developed by the United States National Security Agency, the NSA, in order to gather foreign intelligence. This exploit targeted Windows systems and was suspected to have existed for 5 whole years before a hacker group known as the Shadow Brokers leaked it, as well as other NSA hacking tools. The NSA did not want Microsoft to be aware of this exploit, as then it would be patched and they wouldn't be able to use it anymore, but they were well aware of the damage it was capable of. Many people, including Edward Snowden, who will be covered in a future episode, the famed whistleblower, criticized this, as this attack was, by all means, completely preventable if this exploit would have been patched much earlier. We're even lucky this event didn't turn out significantly worse for the world. So what exactly did Eternal Blue do that made it so dangerous? Eternal Blue took advantage of a vulnerability in Microsoft Windows Server Message Block, also known as SMB protocol, which shares files, printers, and ports with other devices on a network. This vulnerability mishandled data packets from an attacker, which allowed them to execute code on a target computer without being at the target computer. This is known as a remote code execution exploit and is one of the most dangerous exploits a hacker can use for pretty obvious reasons. Only after Eternal Blue was leaked did the NSA even bother to warn Microsoft, who soon released a patch for the vulnerability afterwards. However, the leaking of Eternal Blue and another hacking tool is exactly what enabled the creation of WannaCry, and Microsoft may have responded too late, but through no fault of their own. Eternal Blue was known as a zero-day vulnerability, which is a vulnerability that the owner of the software is entirely unaware of. These types of vulnerabilities are essentially a ticking time bomb. Either hackers will find an exploit to it and cause massive damage, or the software creator will find it and patch it. If a patch was released by Microsoft after the vulnerability was exposed, then how is it still an effective piece of malware? It's fixed now, right? Well, how often do you delay security updates because you just want to keep using your PC? How often do you just keep clicking postpone indefinitely or schedule a time that it never actually updates at because the system is turned off and it can't update when it's off? Well, I mean, I'm guilty of this, and I'm sure you are too. And companies are just run by people. And an example of a company that is run by people who don't like updating software is a hospital. And it's understandable. Hospitals need to keep computers running all day, every day, because emergencies don't stop because Windows says you need to update your PC to a new version. Even a temporary switch to manual charting would be a major slowdown depending on how long the update will take for every single computer in the hospital. Charting never stops, because nurses have to work around the clock and are required to chart every little thing that occurs to ensure that the patient is getting the best care possible. WannaCry was a worm, a virus that was able to make copies of itself and spread across networks by using a backdoor called Double Pulsar. This was the other tool I mentioned earlier that was leaked by the Shadow Brokers. A backdoor is a type of malware that allows an intruder the ability to bypass normal authentication, which allows them to gain full access to a system as if they were an administrator. So, yeah, thanks, NSA, you're really not screwing anyone over by keeping these major secrets so you can take advantage of them. What really made this virus a problem, however, was its ability to encrypt your entire system, which makes all of your files inaccessible to you, and demand a payment in a cryptocurrency you may be familiar with, Bitcoin. Bitcoin was used so that the hackers would be much harder to trace, as unlike official currencies, crypto can be made rather anonymous, and it can be hard to track a certain crypto wallet to a specific individual. If you don't pay the ransom, WannaCry warned that your files were said to be permanently deleted in 3 days. The advice given is the advice given for any type of ransom with normal money. Don't give in to the pressure and don't pay up, because there is no real guarantee your files will be recovered even if you do pay up. For WannaCry, this was ultimately good advice, as the creators of the virus were rather clumsy and didn't actually create a way of associating a payment with the victim's computer. And you may argue this was done purposely, as the hackers just wanted the money and really felt they had no obligation to decrypt the files even if paid, which I agree is a completely fair argument. Either way, 3 days is both not a lot of time to think calmly and reasonably, and a very long time to lose access to important data that might keep an entire company running. It's unknown whether or not any of these files were able to be recovered at all. I've seen reports that said some were recovered, and some that said the files remained completely unrecoverable. At least by not paying, you would only be down your files, not your files plus anywhere between $300 to $600 in Bitcoin. Although, if you are a hospital or any other company with sensitive data, this is still completely crippling, and a couple $100 might seem worth it compared to the losses faced. And, well, no matter what here, you still lost, but I can't blame anyone that paid up out of desperation, as a few $100 is nothing compared to the pricelessness of these kinds of data, especially if it's hospital data. This specific ransomware was unique in that it wasn't targeted on a specific corporation, as many ransomware attacks are targeted so they can be tailored to the weakness of their target and scaled to their relative wealth. This was a very unusual way to make ransomware that was considered a rookie mistake at best and a selfish scheme to get both rich and cripple the economy at worst. And I wouldn't be surprised with either outcome, to be honest. However, the alleged abnormalities did not stop here with WannaCry. It's a strange virus that did so much damage and was also flawed in so many obvious ways, and I am not referring to payment this time. Shockingly, the solution to stopping this worm was hidden within the code itself. It was a built-in kill switch by the very hackers who made it. A man named Marcus Hutchins is to thank for the discovery that WannaCry checked to see if a certain domain name was registered. It seems easy to overlook, but Hutchins registered the domain after noticing it was never registered, and suddenly the worm could no longer spread. It seems that for some reason, the domain name not being registered was a check the malware made in order to spread itself, and it's weird that any hacker would even add this in, as the virus would have been able to do much more damage without it, and it was completely unnecessary. Perhaps it was a kill switch implemented during the testing phase and was just accidentally forgotten to be removed? Anyways, Hutchins registered domains and also set up servers of Crypto's Logic, which was a cybersecurity company, within it to act as honeypots, which were able to effectively track infected systems in order to quarantine them. Hackers attempted to take the website down desperately, perhaps panicked as they realized the virus could no longer spread with the domain registered. They used a botnet, which is a network of computers infected by a malware that causes them to act as a group, to send a large amount of network requests to the newly registered domain. This is a DDoS, or distributed denial of service attack, a cyber attack that, as I said, uses multiple computers to overwhelm a network to disrupt services, such as a web page's availability. These attempts failed, as Hutchins switched to a cached version of the site soon after he noticed these attempts, which could handle the network's loads much better. The site was not able to be taken down successfully, even by a vast network of computers working automatically to do so. And because of him, slowly the worm began to die. Files couldn't be recovered, but the worm could no longer be spread and infect new systems. And although more variants came up, those two were quickly squashed by defensive security experts, who by this point had been bought very valuable time to put in effective countermeasures. Some countermeasures were as simple as registering other domains, as some hacking groups got lazy and simply copied the code and changed the domain to a different one. This move was pretty foolish on the part of any hackers who attempted it, because by this point, the vulnerability by itself had been virtually known by every defensive security expert at this point, and likely no money was made from the clones, as it would have been shut down almost immediately when it was noticed. WannaCry infected an estimated 200,000 computers in the span of 4 days. And the ones who did end up wanting to cry were hospitals in the UK. People were told not to come in unless it was an emergency, as hospital computers were unable to access records. Even some chemotherapy patients were turned away, and do you have any idea how bad of a situation a hospital has to be at for them to turn away cancer patients? Some reports even suggest that MRI and other radiology equipment that was connected to the hospital network were inaccessible, though I've seen evidence that contradicts this as well. Due to WannaCry's ability to spread through networks, it would in theory be able to infect medical devices that send data along the network into a database or a charting software. The ability to connect these devices to a network greatly speeds up the charting process, but we must also keep in mind that this leaves the devices vulnerable as well. And yes, network-connected medical devices do typically run on Windows, but not your typical version of Windows that you're probably running on your PC. But a simple stripped-down version that is appropriate for a simple medical device that doesn't really have a whole lot of space for full operating system. This leaves devices that are old in an especially vulnerable position, more so if the device can't be updated with software patches, and, as you guessed it, this was true of many medical devices running on the bare-bones version of Windows. They were connected to a hospital network, but likely couldn't receive updates from the internet like your computer, and mine do, whenever the software update notification pops up. WannaCry caused an estimated $4 billion in damages, but there is no doubt it would have caused more had the kill switch not been discovered so soon. Overall, WannaCry was a sobering reminder that although the ability to connect devices over a network for easy data sharing is a blessing, it's also a curse, and that if we do not properly diagnose and quarantine infected devices, no matter how simple, we can cause irreparable damage to completely separate devices. I would like to clarify that although this infected hospitals in the UK the most, it was not exclusive to hospitals or to the UK. It was a worldwide virus that infected companies as big as FedEx and Honda. It infected police forces in India. It infected a lot of airlines, including Boeing. It infected a lot of straight-up governments of countries. It infected the University of Montreal. It infected a few other smaller universities. It infected anyone and did not discriminate against any single organization. It just depended on whether or not the virus ended up on your network. And yes, personal individuals were also infected by this, not just companies. My name is Chloe Donis, and thank you for listening to Bite Size Cybercrime. If anyone was working in the NHS around the time of this exploit, please do let me know. I would love to do an interview with someone who actually experienced this firsthand just to see what you observed. And we can, I think, have a pretty good talk about it. So feel free to shoot me an email at cybersec.chloe@gmail.com. That is cyberse.chloe@gmail.com. I would love to chat with anyone who experienced this and can give me more information on what was actually going on, because I've seen a lot of conflicting reports, and I'd love a clear account. Until next time, stay secure.